committee, and I believe we will start out with House Joint Memorial 2, and could we have a little overview here?
Chair, I put together some material on the federal tax schedules for the death tax credit, kind of the history of the rate changes. If you look in your material, you should have a page entitled Estate and Gift Taxes and a Unified Credit and a table there. And this is based on 1997 legislation, which has raised the federal exemption amount, it's called the Unified Credit, from $600,000 directly up to $1 million. So we're in the middle of that process for tax year 98 at $625,000. So those are the bill itself refers to extremely high federal estate tax rates, and that gives you a sense of what the minimum is. And then the next page shows you the rates, the marginal rates, as you go from 0 to 10,000 of taxable amount, it's 18%. And then once you get up to benefits in excess of $3 million, it's a 55% marginal tax rate.
For a second, I'd like to officially go into the work session on this HJM 2, which I did not officially say, and therefore we are in work session.
Okay.
Please continue.
Okay, thank you.
You showed up.
Yeah.
We're in work session on HJM 2.
Really?
With mentioning here of what it's all about.
All right.
Okay. Once an interrupted no end.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I was going through the material on the federal tax rate on estates, and there's we're phasing from a minimum of $600,000 up to $1 million. By the year 2006, and there is a beginning rate of 18% and a maximum rate of marginal rate of 55% for estates valued above $3 million. From the state of Oregon's standpoint, the state receives a death tax credit, which is roughly about $80 million a biennium now, $80 to $90 million over the last several biennium. Actually, $93 is the projection for 99-2001. That death tax credit is up to 16%. It is what is called a pickup tax, meaning that if the state did not pick up that credit, it would not reduce the liability of the taxpayer. It would end up being additional federal revenue. So states have a pretty big incentive to use the pickup credit. And as I said, that's generated $93 million over the in the coming biennium, 99-2001. I've also included a little bit of material that came from the Internal Revenue Service that gives you the number of returns and total gross estates. That's figure A under federal taxation of wealth transfers. There's about every several years IRS does a report, and this data is getting a little old, 1992 returns. But you can see that a fairly high percentage of the number are clustered just between the 600,000 and the 1 million mark, and the 1 million and under 2.5 million. So there's a lot of people that are clustered around that minimum point. And then those above 20 million or more, there's about 6%. Of the total number, but 24% of the total gross estate. One thing I might add, too, in terms of future revenue trends, given the increased values of stock prices we've seen, including yesterday, and the appreciation of real estate values, then you can anticipate those estates are probably growing at a pretty rapid pace over the last several years.
I might say it lost most of that today. Except High Tech, which went down yesterday, also went down big today, fortunately. Well, thank you for that update. Yes, just checked on.
All right, you were right into a work session on HJM 2.
We do have the sponsor here today.
Oh, me and Mr. Carlson?
He doesn't want to get in the way of progress.
The resolution should pass. Okay.
All right, we're in a work session, and Senator Wild has moved.
I will move HJM 2
to the floor with a view pass recommendation.
Sounds excellent.
Is there discussion? The clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator Byers, Senator Firestone.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
Aye.
Vice Chair Lyle.
Aye.
Chair Miller.
Vote aye. HJM2 is passed to the floor. Close the work session. Do you want to carry it? It's a fun one. You can be sure you'll get a little opposition, so maybe I should carry it just because I enjoy that. Well, Senator Hartman knows I have a tremendous amount of commitments.
Okay.
This that's fine. Otherwise, I'll do it. All right. Very wild, Carrie. We'll now open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 680. Mr. Waters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 680 creates a personal income tax credit for contributions to cultural institutions. It defines in broad terms what cultural institutions are, and it states that the credit is limited to $50 for single filers or $100 for joint filers. They said the credit would be allowed in addition to any charitable deduction that would be allowed under current law with respect to that contribution. And it would apply to tax years beginning January 1, 2000 and thereafter.
All right. Thank you. You have a revenue impact here.
Mr. Chair, I have a statement. The dollar amount of the revenue impact is as yet uncertain. I was hoping to stumble upon a little more data or some source of information that could help me to triangulate on that a little bit.
All right. Is there anyone who wished to testify on Senate Bill 680?
Yes, sir.
All right, come on up. I've got the list up here. So that's A-OK. If you'd identify yourself for our record, and
I think there are several others that would like to come. But
that would be fine.
Do you want to come up now? There's our friend.
Gotta be somebody's friend.
I might have at least four or five friends in here.
I'll begin. I'm Kathleen Stevenson Kuhn, and I'm representing an organization called the Northwest Business for Culture and the Arts. It's an organization of over 150 Oregon companies who have joined together in support of arts and culture in our state. They understand what it does for the economics, clearly, but they also understand what it does for community, what it does for the children of our community, and have come collectively together to encourage more business support for arts and culture and more public and private support, looking at different strategies that they can use to more adequately support nonprofit cultural institutions that do so much for our community. The bill that you have in front of you is one piece of legislation that they care about and feel would really encourage more private giving to nonprofits. And so I'm here speaking on behalf of that organization and specifically on behalf of several individuals who have who strongly recommend passage of this. One is Bill Thorndike, who is from Medford Fabrications, and I think has sent a letter in support. Another is the John Hampton of Hampton Affiliates, who has been a strong patron himself and now is asking for opportunities to encourage more giving through through this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, here's the other testimony that you may have questions.
Sure, I'll go ahead. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Larry Harvey. I'm here today on behalf of the Cultural Advocacy Coalition. It is even broader than the organization that Kathleen just mentioned, in as much as it has a representation throughout the state of a variety of not just the usual larger organizations that we often think of within the context of arts and humanities, but more importantly, some of the smaller community groups that don't necessarily get the headlines, don't necessarily get the big grants, and quite often are very dependent upon local contributions to keep their doors open. Senate Bill 680, which was actually introduced at the suggestion of Mr. Thorndike, whose letter you just had distributed to you, was actually prompted because the organizations that I represent realize that it's imperative that we work more closely in conjunction with local communities and regular donors. All too often, I'm sure that most of you have sat through a number of sessions where there are three times the request for money than actual dollars available to do any single project. And that does not make any of the projects unworthy. That just makes it hard for you to prioritize to make the tough decisions. So we appreciate that. Nevertheless, we know historically and documentable evidence from around the United States suggests that when community members themselves, regular citizens who normally wouldn't necessarily have much of an opportunity to participate in cultural heritage activities, have the opportunity to become directly involved, either financially or otherwise, there is an increased interest and an increased opportunity for folks to raise money, specifically because money's what keeps the lights on. We know that because of some circumstances even here in Oregon, where we've worked with a variety of industry people, for instance, to use local revenues for supporting the Portland Center for the Performing Arts and the Civic Stadium and a variety of other institutions where it's just not, we're just not able to provide enough money for them. The intent of Senate Bill 680, if I can just direct you to the bill itself, for example, is if you'll take a look at chapter or section 2 of the bill, in subsection 2, we're suggesting that as an incentive for folks that might have the opportunity to make a direct financial contribution to a qualified heritage or cultural institution, that a percentage of that contribution be allowed to be a tax credit. Not necessarily the entire contribution. We could have a variety of circumstances here, and so obviously that would be one of the reasons why it would be difficult to offer you a fiscal analysis of this bill today, because we don't know what the percentage would be. You'll notice that on line 11 there's a blank there, and we can fill that blank in with whatever number we decide. But the typical scenario might be that as other tax credits have functioned in the past in Oregon, if you were to make a $100 contribution and 50% of it or 25% of it would actually be applied as a tax credit, the institution itself still gleans the benefit of the entire contribution, and the citizen has the benefit of knowing that 25% of it could be utilized against their tax liability. We don't know how much that would be, as again, as I said. So the discussion today would be somewhat empty without the exact fiscal impact, so I appreciate that. We're grateful that we have the opportunity to bring this issue forward for a discussion today. We understand that there are a lot of different ways that this could be worked with regard to how it would benefit more people. We understand that possibly, and it's been suggested to us, that possibly utilizing this credit in conjunction with supporting partnerships between educational institutions and cultural or heritage institutions would be wise, and we don't disagree with that. We're very interested in the type of partnerships that we could form. And in fact, Senate Bill 725, which was passed out of the Senate Education Committee, was exactly, outlined a program exactly like that, the creation of partnerships between cultural and educational institutions. So, notwithstanding the fact that what you do have before you is a legislative proposal that isn't complete at this point, it wouldn't be difficult to conceptually finish it and create the opportunity for what we're looking for, which is greater participation at the individual citizen level. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you do have any.
Well, we'll hear the remaining testimony and then we'll
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Chris Darcy. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Arts Commission. The commission over the past year has been involved in some collaborative cultural planning with other cultural institutions, the Historical Society, the Oregon Heritage Commission, the Council on the Humanities. And one of the things that we've really looked at are ways to create greater incentives for public and private increased support of arts and culture. And we believe that Senate Bill 680 responds to some of those recommendations. The commission directly funds probably 125 arts organizations. And we would support any way, as Mr. Harvey said, to increase the average citizen contributing to the arts and culture of our state.
Thank you. Are there questions? Senator Wild?
I wanted to discuss revenue, potential revenue impact. So if you want to get to that, but in question, then.
Are there questions of these witnesses?
Senator Byers.
The intent here is to not focus on the large giver who's already doing it as a deduction, but to make it possible for sort of a standard Joe and Mary to make a contribution, encourage them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Byers, you're absolutely correct. Our experience has been, in Oregon in particular, that large contributors are not necessarily making the donation because of any tax incentive. It's not necessary in their case. It's generally the situation. Some of our most generous givers continue to give, but that's a limited market. We are interested in creating a relationship between, as you suggested, the average Joe and Mary, the average citizen, not necessarily to give, again, to the larger institutions, but those same folks might be incentivized, I think that's the word, to give to their organizations now on the public record. Might be encouraged to give to perhaps their local theater that they're, or their local art class or their local resident historian, if in fact that would be the best way for their children to have some type of exposure to a cultural experience that would be outside of the major metropolitan area.
That could have a big deal, a big benefit in schools when we establish an art program.
The Chair, Senator Byers, I think you and I are thinking along the same lines at this point.
Senator Byers, if I might respond to that as well. One of the things... my organization, Northwest Business for Culture and the Arts, works closely with the Oregon Community Foundation and the Ford Family Foundation and Meyer Memorial. And what they all care about is encouraging Oregonians to be better philanthropists. We're still a young state. We don't have the old traditions of giving. And any time we can encourage people to give small amounts, it is a beginning, and they often realize what they gain personally by giving. And so this is about helping encourage that.
Couple of weeks, I think it is, we had some hearings here on the tax checkoff. And there was a discussion of one approach of rotating who gets that wonderful spot on the tax form versus the view of some that we should just get rid of the whole block and allow charities to compete with one another a bit more fairly. This presupposes, and I'm sure you're good advocates for it, that we should create a special place in the tax code for this kind of giving and advantage it over everything else. Can you help me justify that?
Mr. Chair, I will certainly make an honest attempt at justifying that. From the standpoint of culture, that is to say, specifically who Oregonians are, what we're attempting to do here is create the opportunity to encourage citizens, all citizens, to invest in maintaining some type of investment in the very essence of who Oregonians are and why the state exists. To say, suggest that that should have precedent over other tax credits or tax incentives, frankly, is probably a pretty good idea. And the reason is very simple, in my opinion. Oregon is special for a variety of reasons. We hold and cherish our history, some of our basic traditions, some of the diversity that makes the state what it is, and a credit such as this, or an incentive such as this, would actually function in a twofold manner. It not only brings to the consciousness of the individual donor exactly what it is that they're giving to, but why, and also provides them an incentive, not necessarily to write a tax or make a tax-deductible contribution via their tax return that would go somewhere, and we're not sure. I personally don't even understand how that works, but a dollar would go somewhere into an account that somehow gets to another organization. And it's a very loose relationship. I wouldn't know where I end up with that money going, and that's why I personally never do that. I want to be able to hand my money to someone that I know and trust and feel that that's the place where it should be invested. And that also is encouraged by this bill. So if we're in fact going to try to move away from continually having folks come to the state legislature or trying to get them to do a tax write-off, it seems pretty vague as to how that works. What we need to do is make them encourage them to take their personal contribution directly to an institution that they have faith in, that might be a local museum, might be a science institution, might be the theater in the local community in Duper, Oregon, for all I know. But I know that they don't have as much access as an organization that functions out of metropolitan Portland.
You're suggesting, I guess, that this credit might even be at least equal to the political tax credit candidates receive. That's all right. But, I mean, that's...
I wouldn't mind responding. Well, you know, I know...
I would remove that.
Pardon me?
I would remove that today if I was acting with the authority of the rest of this legislature, because, and this brings to my mind the question that I have posed to many who resist getting rid of the political tax credit. They tell me that they couldn't raise the money, in their view, but for the credit. My response is, well, that's pretty pathetic. The question for you then becomes, are you suggesting that without this credit, that the great purposes that you addressed in your testimony and the great work would not be supported by citizens in a less incentivized atmosphere?
I think one of the one of the points that I was attempting to make is that the way the resource system functions currently in Oregon is that the larger institutions who are able to qualify for a variety of different grants and have the staff support to write those grants and so on function, and we do have a concentration of those resources in one area, one geographical area in the state. The part of the emphasis behind this bill is to reconnect folks with their heritage and develop partnerships in their communities. The partnership would be between the educational system and between the cultural system. And what this bill would do, and its intention, is not necessarily to say, well, gee, we can't collect any money unless you give us some kind of a tax break. It's the encouragement of the citizen to say, you know, I'd make a contribution to the culture fund if I knew that my money was going to something that I would benefit from. So in this case, they could write their check or make their direct contribution to something in their community. Is there anything that prevents them from doing that now? No, and a number of people do. But I believe that this legislation would provide a greater opportunity for people who are afraid to give because they want something specific to get the support.
Senator Byer?
Thank you, Chair.
If you all want to join in on responses anytime.
And we do have at least one other person who has come to testify.
Okay.
This is, frankly, this is kind of an interesting discussion that we had in terms of contributing to schools before. In fact, this is one of the areas you brought to mind that we were really talking about before, and I'm sort of an opinion question I'd like to ask you. It's all one of how much can the state afford? If we were not doing a dollar-for-dollar match, if it was like you get 50 cents on every dollar you gave, do you think that would be as much of an incentive?
I think any incentive would be helpful. And I'd like to go back to Senator Miller's question a little bit, if I might. Currently, most of the arts, heritage, and humanities programs we have around the state are privately funded. There's very little public funding that goes into these programs. The rare exception is really the Portland metropolitan area, and that's a fairly new phenomenon. So my first point is there is a great deal of private support for, as Larry has mentioned, our larger institutions, most of them Portland-based. We have a very low level of philanthropy in this state. It is increasing. It is doing well. But if you think of the small to mid-sized organizations in small communities, they struggle. They do phenomenal work with so little capital. It's amazing. Anytime we can broaden the number of people who give privately, and any time we can encourage them to give more, it really equalizes the playing field, so to speak. And so I think what's most important about this is, whether it's more important than other nonprofits, I wouldn't begin to speak to that. I think any time we can encourage philanthropy to any nonprofits who provide amazing services in our community, that's a good thing. And I also wouldn't begin to compare it to the political credit, because I think they're pretty different. Although one could make the case that it's all about asking everyone to be a member of society and come forth with something and support what they believe. So I'm not sure whether I got to your answer, but we're really talking about undercapitalized organizations that struggle, but do amazing things in our community, and how can we support them, and how can we get more people to step forward?
It strikes me as one option that we could consider would be, and that's sort of going back to the discussion we got on schools, it would be possible to just set this up of, you know, any taxpayer can contribute this amount to these kinds of things, nonprofits, educational agencies, sporting activities.
So among the feature I've invited Mr. Harvey to explore was that very bill that I had regarding the education tax credit. This could perhaps be added on.
Well, they're particularly, what they're talking about
is this combination and we viewed as educational.
Most of the people who testified in support of that concept were talking about things like reinstituting arts and sporting programs to the school, things that were cut out before. And actually, the
Senator Byer, you had a bill up today. Wouldn't that? I mean, that would be helpful.
Meeting that?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, we're going to get to it just by any means.
You just got to get started somewhere.
After a while. I, for one, am what would be considered an artist on this committee, and so I have perhaps a different perspective of this, because to me, you don't have to convince me of the necessity of having this in society. I mean, I have a wife who's has a master's degree in viola performance, but because of the living that she would otherwise possibly make trying to be a violist, she's an attorney who happens to play for community orchestras. Well, I know how they try to scrape by and how well attended many of their concerts are, but if you want to get the general public in and give them a taste of a different type of culture, which is a very educational experience, you can't charge them a lot. You're trying to just get general, ordinary people who, if they saw a price tag on a ticket, would turn around and say, hey, kids, let's go somewhere else. But because they offer it for free, and that's the best way of doing it if you want to get to the general public, they have very little amount of resources other than going out and begging. And if they want quality musicians to play, I mean, those people have other obligations, and you sort of have to toss them something in the way of a reward for having come and played. And so it's very difficult, and you just have to have the debate. Does society need the arts? Personally, I would say absolutely and completely. And throughout history, yes, they have had to be subsidized because it's been very difficult to keep, other than perhaps the church back in Europe, who would employ the musicians and employ the composers and employ the painters. Other than that, or the royal court, no one else could afford it. And so, also being a violin historian, I could speak for hours on this issue. However, I will not do that. I will simply say that I really hope that we don't compare this to the political tax credit, because politics will continue regardless of whether we have that tax credit or not. The elections will take place. People will run for office. But I don't know that the arts will continue. You look at what happened in the Netherlands when a new government came into power and who had the feeling that perhaps the arts aren't essential and perhaps we shouldn't subsidize them in any way. And they closed down two of their major world-renowned orchestras, and they cut back significantly on a third. And I'll tell you, rebuilding those, people leave and they don't come back. And the Netherlands, in terms of the arts, is the place that made it through the Dark Ages and still continued to promote the arts when the rest of the world was not doing it. So I would say it's really an important and essential component of everyday life that we just don't even pay attention to, but it's really there. Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. The reason that I reference from time to time the political tax credit is, one, share your opinion that it would go on. Politics obviously would continue to be very well funded without it. But secondly, is the current revenue in the expenditure report of an $8.1 million impact on the expenditure side whenever we think of a new credit. We have to deal with what will be the impact toward other things that are funded. And so if we are going to take this extraordinary step of actually allowing citizens to direct the use of their money, we know that we won't get our hands on quite as much of it. And it's just something we will need to work out. I was about a week ago in the Wall Street Journal on some column under tax notes. So one day at the end, I think in a rather facetious way, they said someone was proposing a credit, which in effect said that it would be a credit given to anyone who didn't have a use of some other identified credit. So. I think about it, we could develop such a thing. Oh, it's just funny. Give every citizen a credit. They can give it to the arts. They can give it to whomever. I guess the Department of Revenue would wonder about some of the recipients, perhaps. But, we got a lot of them. So we thank you for your testimony. Thank you for the opportunity. And who else would like? Well, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Mangan with Standard Insurance Company. I'm also a board member of the Business Committee for Culture and the Cultural Advocacy Commission. I appreciate spending a couple minutes to echo the panel's very eloquent remarks. I'm also very pleased that you are willing to have a debate on the bill, knowing the thorns that surround all tax credit debates. I understand that it's basically a tax expenditure. But I really like the notion of using a credit like this as leverage, as a way to provide more bang for the private dollar and more bang for the public dollar. It seems in the business community we like those kinds of formulas where you spend $1 and can leverage investments of $10 or $20 from other sources. And we think that especially in small communities around the state where we do have underfunded, very tenuous cultural institutions of all types, that this is the kind of thing that could get citizens involved, build a connection, and build the breadth of support that, frankly, Oregon needs to work on. As a longtime resident of the state, I know we need to do better. And our large donors will continue to give, but the small donors, I think, would benefit from this kind of activity. I also believe we're leveraging dollars directly into the public education system with this kind of a credit. As you mentioned, Mr. Chairman, the credit for school foundations is really not much different than this kind of a credit, because we're putting money into cultural institutions that educate our kids. And I know that basically most of my education came outside of school through other means, through the museum, through symphonies, through historical societies, the things that I was exposed to. And I think if we can get more kids involved in those things, we're basically supporting the public education system as well. So I just wanted to add that comment to the record.
Thank you, John. Are there questions? Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 680? If not, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 680. Be the intention of the chairman to continue to listen to other ideas as to how we might blend this in, perhaps to other bills, or perhaps get some information regarding a number we could plug in.
And that, could we see the potential revenue impact for, say, perhaps a 25%? I would like 50, but I know that would be too high.
Did we ever get to that revenue impact of 50% on the education credit?
Yeah. Didn't you look at the numbers?
Yeah, you ran them, didn't you?
Yes, you did.
Yeah. You still don't recall what you were talking
about. That's all right. So there we go.
Figured in a bread box?
Yeah. All right, any other requests on this bill? Likely get it back before us in some form.
Yeah.
Is there anything further to come before the committee? If not, we are adjourned.
Yeah.